Hello, this is Melissa. It is Real History, and today is April 4, 2024, and I am joined today by Prince. And how are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm okay.
I already
had a full morning. I had to go down and have some more work done on my car.
Right. Well, you said you had an old car, right?
It is. It was my dad's car, and it's about, I think, 18 years old now. And they were doing a little bit of work on the air conditioning.
Right.
And I just thought, while I had it there, I'd ask them, there's a broken passenger, you know, the exterior mirror is broken, and I kind of keep it taped together, but I thought I'd ask if they could get a new one for me. And
right.
Also, the visor, the sun visor, is broken. So I asked
right.
about that. And they called and they told me something that I was not surprised to hear. They said, the dealer says that those are obsolete. They no longer
right.
sell them.
Unless you could find it in a junkyard.
Well, they're looking. They're looking for secondhand dealers. But it's just that they also know we got to talking about electric vehicles and the hybrids, and they know what's coming down the pike. So
yeah, they want all the old done with and gone with.
That's right.
They don't want it around no more. So
nope.
That's the direction we headed in.
They said that the Teslas are basically self-driving. So this mechanic that I was talking to said, if you are late on your payment, you get behind, they don't send somebody out to repossess the vehicle anymore. It can just drive itself back to the dealer.
Hey, well, I can dig that right there.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's great, you know. I can dig that right there, you know. It's funny, though, but anyway.
Yeah.
Hey, it sounds true, though. I wouldn't put nothing past what's going on in this world.
Nah.
So yeah.
Do you want to, I know you said you didn't want to talk about yourself, but do you want to say anything about who you are?
Well, I'm just a regular person, you know. I was born and raised in Flint, Michigan. It wasn't nothing really significant about my childhood other than, I did everything that regular children did. The only thing I did different was I didn't want to go to school. I never wanted to go to school. I couldn't go to school. I didn't understand school. When I went to school, I really didn't learn anything. There was no freedom in school. I mean, the first thing I learned when I was going to school in the first grade, you know, I thought I was at home, you know, so if I wanted to get up and get a drink of water or go to the bathroom, I didn't realize I had to raise my hand and ask permission, you know. So with that experience right there, hey, that just put a big X in my mind as far as school went. You know, I never adapted or got along in school no more after that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I started skipping school when I was in the third grade. I started skipping school. And I got whoopings for skipping school. I got punishments for not going to school. My father said, why can't you just be like everybody else and go to school, you know? But, hey, it just wasn't in me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it. And when I started school in a little schoolhouse, you know. Kindergarten was on the bottom floor. First grade was on the second floor, and second grade was over in the next building, you know. And mostly it was just us children in the neighborhood, you know. We knew everybody. I mean, we knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
We had the kindergarten teacher was the Sunday school teacher at church. And then my teacher upstairs, Miss Craven, she was just a little old black woman, you know. And everything, I don't know, everything was all right, you know. Then they built the big red brick school about a mile from the house. And we had to go to the brand new school. And then when my mother took me to school the first day at the brand new school, and I walked in the classroom, and it was all these different kind of people, you know. And I didn't know none of these people, you know. And then I had the teacher was a old white lady. She had white hair and stuff, you know.
Really?
And everything was just so different. I didn't want to let go of my mother's leg. I didn't want to stay there, you know, but she made me stay. And, hell, I started skipping school again right after that. You know, I just, I just didn't have a good feeling about school, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Although I made it all the way to the 10th grade before I finally got put out. I even had a couple of years where I got real good grades and made the honor roll, you know, but, It just wasn't for me. Matter of fact, me and my mother, we went to a meeting at the Board of Education, and they told her that they had my records and stuff, said, your son, he just won't adapt, you know. So if he want to finish school, he's going to have to go to adult school, you know. So I went to adult school, and I got my GED in adult school. Later on, I even went to 2 years at junior college. I was going to be a nutritionist.
Hmm.
Part of being a nutritionist or a dietitian or whatever you want to call it, you know, that involved food and cooking and so forth, you know. So I caught on to the cooking aspects of everything, you know. That's how I became a chef. Matter of fact, I retired as a chef. You know, I've been in all the big casinos around Las Vegas. I've been all kind of chefs. I can cook everything. I can create recipes. I mean, anything to do with food, I can do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They used to call me Chef Prince. I had a little catering business where we would go into people's houses. And we would plan menus and stuff for them. They would buy the food and stuff. We'd go to the store and get the food. We'd take it to their house. We'd cook the food, set the table, serve the food, clean up, and then go on about our business, you know. But it just got to a point where people, they don't want to pay nothing no more, so it wasn't really worth my while doing that anymore. So anyway, right now, I'm a gardener. Me and my wife, we grow food. We started a community garden.
Oh, that's great.
Now we belong to an even bigger community garden. And in our garden, we have orchards. We got peach trees. We got all kind of fruit trees, lemon trees. We grow fruit. We grow vegetables. We grow all kind of vegetables, green vegetables, yellow vegetables, purple vegetables. We grow everything, you know.
What's your favorite thing to cook?
What is my favorite thing to cook?
Mm-hmm.
I really don't have a favorite thing to cook since I can cook anything. You know, I really don't have a favorite thing. I mean, I just like to cook, period, you know. I like to cook. I like to bake. I mean, you know, I guess everybody has something that comes easy to them and it's not work. And to me, when it comes to the kitchen and preparing food, I mean, I enjoy it, you know. And I enjoy it even more serving people and watching people eat and watching people enjoy, you know, what I fix for them, you know. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy cleaning up everything, you know, because everything in that line. Wars and all that stuff. I grew up through all that stuff. The civil rights movement, you know. I mean, back in the day, Black Power, the Black Panthers, Angela Davis. I grew up with all that stuff. You know, Kill Whitey, you know, Black Muslims, the Patriot Movement and all the people involved in the Patriot Movement and, you know, the different religions. I done belong to all the different religions, you know, from Jehovah's Witness, the Baptist, the Muslim, you name it. I done tried everything, you know, but I got no satisfaction out of nothing. The only time when I really found satisfaction is one day I caught the last part of a program. It was the Jeff Rentz show. I could catch it on AM, FM radio at nighttime. Mm-hmm. And I heard this guy talking about revelations and the meaning of the revelations, you know. And I couldn't quite get it all because it was on AM radio, you know. And all, even though I could get the program, you know, everything was still faint. It would come in and it would go out, come in, go out, you know. But anyway, I caught his name and his website. So what I did, me and my wife, I even went out and bought a computer, you know, just so I could find this guy. You know, Alan Watt, cuttingthroughthematrix.com. Anyway, I found Alan Watt, and to my surprise, you know, this guy was exactly what I was looking for. Because I was out there in the desert trying to find my way, looking for truth, and boom, 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 here he is, Alan Watt. I mean, this guy, he made such an impression on me. I mean, everything he talked about, how he explained it. I mean, it just helped me to see. It gave clarity. I can see now. Now that the rain is gone, I can clearly see now, you know.
Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be bright, 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 sunshiny day.
Anyway, Alan Watt brought all that to me, you know. And I've been listening to Alan Watt for 17 years.
That is great.
And I'm still listening to Alan Watt today.
Uh-huh.
And the reason I still listen to Alan Watt today, because I don't care what he talked about. Everything he talked about pertains to the past, it pertains to the present, and it pertains to the future. And out of every talk, including his books and everything else, you know, it's like a reference library. You forget something, you can go back, look it up, bring it up, and hey, what else can I say? I mean, you live with the man, so you can understand what I'm talking about.
I can.
I mean, all I can do is give him his just due, you know. I mean, because he did a lot for my life, you know, to help turn me around, to help me to see things clear. And I appreciate everything he done for me. I mean, all his little notes that he ever wrote me, you know, I got all of them taped up here on the wall. Everything he wrote me and told me, you know, I got everything up there on the wall, you know. But it's one thing I remember. I had wrote Alan a little note, and I told him, I understand. I said, the whole purpose of all this is to gain consciousness.
Yes.
And when you leave here, you want to leave here in some kind of conscious state of mind. Because to leave here in some kind of conscious state of mind, you can continue the battle on.
Mm-hmm.
Because life doesn't end here, and the battle doesn't end here. The battle continues on the spiritual side, because really this is a spiritual battle. This is a battle for the soul. Or you can say this is a battle for the mind, this is a battle for the body, the soul. And if all that is conquered, you can forget about the spirit.
That's right.
Because the spirit is your connection to the true creator of the universe. So if you don't have the rest, you can't make that connection no more, because all you are is a zombie. You're the walking dead.
That's right.
And nowadays, as you walk around, or I ride around, I got a motorcycle, and I just ride around on my motorcycle. That's all you see today is a bunch of spiritless, zombified people. People who, they don't even have any type of idea of who they are, where they came from, or where they're going. I mean, it's a little thing in the Bible where Jesus say he was a man of sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, every day I leave his house and I'm out there in the world, I'm a man of sorrow, because it's a pitiful sight now, you know. People look at Las Vegas on television and think it's this wonderful, shining place, you know, with all this activity and everybody's doing so good and yada, yada, yada.
Hey, Tommy, that's that boy whose record everybody's talking about.
I can take you on my back through some places in this city that's purely disgusting. The homeless problem around this place is pitiful. The possessed people walking around this place is pitiful. I mean, the whole world is under a spell. And they don't even know that they under a spell. Or you can say the whole world is possessed, and they don't even realize they're possessed, you know.
You know, Alan used to say that the way that you see things is your perspective, and that you could talk about a psychopathic person and what characterized a psychopathic person, and then compare that to someone who was possessed. And he said you'd have very similar description there. So it's the secular world would say that's a psychopath, but the Christian idea would be that that was a person who was possessed. He also said we're in a culture now that is psychopathic by design.
True.
So you could also exchange that word, a culture that's psychopathic, and you could say it's a culture that's completely possessed, or they're just wandering around like zombies. Something else is in control. It's But before I carry on talking, though, I wanted to tell you that I'm having a few little computer problems. And when you were talking earlier, my digital software that records us, it just stopped. And so I'm just going to keep watching the clock on it. And if it stops, I'll just press record again and keep going. But I wanted to make sure that people heard that you are 75 years old. You're retired from being a chef. You have started a community garden with your wife. You grow things, you cook, you love to cook. And you already, I think I got on there that you were listening to Alan for 17 years. Where we came back on, you had talked about the fact that Jehovah's Witness or Baptist or Muslim, you had tried it all. And that's I clicked that again. But what I also wanted to just add in here, because it kind of ties into what you're saying, is that when I play this, when this goes up on Thursday, I will have already played the Redux that I had for Easter. And I told you the other day when I called and asked if you wanted to do this with me, what was going on in my head that I knew that I needed to do that day, which was Thursday, was to pick out the talk that was going up for the Redux. And I wanted it to be to kind of hit on some of the esoteric ideas of Easter. But that was all in my head. But what I did was I called you. I said, "Hey, Prince, how are you?" And you just started talking. You said, "I need to tell you about a talk that of Alan's that I think you need to share with the listeners," because you said everything Alan said was profound. But this talk is worth hearing, and it's worth hearing several times, because you said, "I think this talk will really help people." Well, I got to tell you, Prince, that is possibly the best talk that could have gone up on Easter Sunday, because it really is about dying to the illusions of this system, dying to this world and everything that's in it, not looking for anyone else to guide your path, to direct your path, but answering those questions for yourself about what is here and what lies beyond.
Right.
And you said that you've got all of those notes that Alan wrote you over the years, and they're posted up on your wall. Well, I used to save the things that you sent to Alan, and I still save the notes that you send me, because it's short and sweet. You get right to the point. So like one time you sent Alan a photocopy from his books, which was the "Where There Is Nothing." It's that little quote, and I don't have it from memory, and I don't have it open there, but basically,
where there's nothing, you'll find God where there's nothing.
Yeah. And that's after you've smashed every illusion that you have, everything that you thought you knew about this system. Then you're left with nothing. So where do you start? And I'll say this, because the Redux has already gone up, which was the second hour of the talk that Alan had with Henrique on Red Ice Radio, and they talked about spirituality. And what Alan said in that talk is the true Trinity through the ages, the Trinity, or the first Trinity, was described as body, soul, spirit. And what we have, what we see in this, whatever you want to call it, psychopathic or possessed world, are bodies. And we can look around and we can now even ask the question, and it's legitimate, is there even a soul in them? Because as Alan explained in that talk, the soul animates drives you to find your soul mate, which is your spirit.
Right.
And that's what brings you to true consciousness.
Right.
It's a brilliant suggestion, Prince. I got to say, I love it every time I get a note from you or hear from you, because you've always just gone right to the heart of the matter.
Yeah, but you know, it's other things to add to that too. Like, see, it's a battle of the individual.
Yes.
Everybody has their own personal battle. Just like everybody have their own personal experiences. You know, you can only change the world by changing yourself. And the only way you can change yourself is, like Alan said, you know, you gotta know thyself. Mm-hmm. You gotta become an individual. You gotta learn to think for yourself. You gotta become your own champion. And these are ways that you can change the world. You can be a walking, living example. You know, there'll be somebody that would be able to look at you and see how you are and see how you're dealing with the world. And that might set a spark in them to try to do something of the same sort in their life. So, like he did say, it's a battle for the individual. It's not a group thing or nothing like that. It's your own personal battle. Everybody's got to sing their own song. And everybody has to find their own song. It's a battle to eliminate the individual, you know, from the face of the earth, you know. And like he said, the only time the elite ever had a problem, it came from individuals.
That's right.
So now you can understand why everything's being standardized into one. Now you can understand why about uniformity and you know, there's no flavor in the world. Want to eliminate all the flavor in the world. Don't want nothing but one flavor, you know. And turning everything into their utopia is turning everything into a hell. I mean, for the people.
Yes.
And and that's where we're at. We're in hell, you know. Hey, you know, I was laughing because, you know, like somebody you would call somebody and they would say hello, or you would say hello.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking about that, hell low. You know, really you're saying hell is low. So, you know, so, you know, hello, we here. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like the chemtrails in the sky, you know, chemtrails, you know, chemical trails or trails of chemicals. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about, you mm-hmm. know. And then you see them up in the sky and they make the big X in the sky, you know, where the X, you put the X on the face of a bottle of poison. You
yes.
see what I mean? They letting you know that you're being poisoned, you know.
That's right.
And then the X is a cross.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is a cross. You know what, this character, Jesus Christ, he was crucified on a cross, you know. And a crucifixion is supposed to be a horrible death, you know. And you know, so it's signs and symbols everywhere. I mean, even though all this is going on, this is not a boring place. It's so much happening in this world. If your eyes are open, if you can see, if you can hear, it's so much to do every day. It's so much to observe. It's astounding what's going on, what you can see, what you can hear when your eyes and ears are open. So really, I don't have a boring day. I never have a boring day anymore because I see so much. I hear so much. And, you know, I wake up every morning just about at 3 o'clock in the morning because at 3 o'clock in the morning around here, everybody's asleep. And that's the best time for me to go sit on my porch. And I sit on my porch. And it's peaceful and it's quiet. You know, and you can think. You can think about everything, you know. It's a beautiful time of the day. And I try to be in the house early. I'm in the bed every day between 6 and 7 o'clock. Just so I can go ahead and get my rest, so I can get up at 3 o'clock and enjoy my peaceful part of the day.
That's nice. And then you go down to the garden?
Then I always start my day at the gym. Uh-huh. You know, that's another interesting place is the gym. Because you see so much at the gym. You hear so much at the gym, you know. And one of the first things that tickled me when I noticed at the gym, I noticed all the women have these skin-tight, yoga pants, leotards. Mm-hmm. I mean, it looks like they've been painted on, you know. And you can see every crook and cranny. I mean, you know, they might as well be walking around nude, you know. And I was telling myself, this ain't nothing but pornography right here. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all it is pornography. Mm-hmm. Back in my days, women that dressed like that, we called them teasers, you know. Mm-hmm. And this is all it is, you know. And you got the old men in the gym, they walking around with their eyes popped out of their head, you know. And then you got the young men. They could care less because they looking at each other. So, I mean, it's just a trip, you know. I just do my thing and I take everything in, you know. And then once in a while, you know, you got the she men using the women's locker room. It's just all kind of cipher things to see at the gym, you know. But I like going to the gym because I like working out, you know. I mean, I'm 75 years old, you know, so I gotta keep myself fit so I can keep going, you know. And after I leave the gym, that's when I go work in my garden. Another beautiful place. It's like the Garden of Eve, you know. Uh-huh. It sits in back of a Seventh-day Adventist church is way in the back. It's very peaceful. It's very, very quiet, you know. Only visitors you get is from the homeless people crawling over the fence, you know. They'll come in and see if they can scrounge something, you know. But, hey, I don't mind, you know.
How big
I mean,
is
because,
the
like, all the food that we grow, whatever we don't use or take home, we give it to the church. Mm-hmm. Me and my wife, we give it to the homeless people. I mean, that's another one of my sanctuaries. That's another part of my therapy. And then I got another therapy that's playing racquetball.
Ah.
I've been playing racquetball. That's why my knees are messed up. That's why I'm having knee surgery, you know, so I can continue playing racquetball. I've been playing racquetball for 20 years or more, you know.
See, and that's part of my... You're getting your knee fixed so you can go back and mess it up again.
Say what?
You're getting your knee fixed up so that you can go mess it up again.
Well, what the hell, you know, I'm 75 years old, so I might as well go for it, you know.
Yeah. Well, I want to say to Prince that the day that this goes up on Thursday, the 4th, is actually the day that you'll be in the hospital having the knee surgery.
Oh, is that right?
That's right. So we're all going to wish you a good, speedy recovery, and I'm sure it'll be good. My cousin's husband had knee surgery about a year and a half ago, and he said it took a lot more physical therapy than he thought it would, but he was very faithful on the physical therapy, and he's doing really great and very happy that he had it done.
Well, I'm glad he had it done, you know, because I had the other one done, and it worked out well.
Good.
I mean, it's doing great, you know. And, you know, one thing about this type of knee surgery, knee replacement surgery, you know, when it comes to doing the therapy, it's a lifetime thing. Long as you get up in the morning and make the therapy part of your morning plan, you know, you won't have any problems with your knees no more after that, you know. Because, like I said, I still do my knee therapy every morning as part of my exercise plan, you know. So
how big is the community garden?
We got, let me see, how many beds we got in the community garden? I don't know, Melissa. It's just a huge place. It's a big place, you know.
That's
if
great.
I ever get a chance, I have my wife take pictures of it, and because she got a cell phone, and she likes to take pictures, and she likes to talk on her cell phone, and she likes to be on her computer, and she likes her TV and stuff, you know. So I'll give her to send you some pictures, you know.
Well, if she sends me those pictures soon, I can use them in the little video that I make. That would be fun.
Well, maybe that's we'll be there tomorrow, so maybe I can have her take the pictures and send them to you tomorrow.
Okay. How long have you been married?
Well, me and my wife, we went to the high school prom together, me and my wife.
So that's a long time.
That's a long time. You know, me and my wife, they called it teenagers. Me and my wife have been together since we was teenagers. I guess you could say it was one of those love at first sight deals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I love my wife from the first sight, and evidently she must have loved me because she tells me that all the time. But in spite of that, you know, my wife, she has her world, and I got my world. Her world is in her room. My world is in my room, you know. She got her TV, computer. I mean, she got all her stuff over there. I got all my stuff over here. You know, we get up, we meet in the hallway. You know, we'll greet each other, give each other a hug and stuff, you know, but I don't try to mash none of my stuff on her. She know what I'm about. She hears my stuff. She don't want to hear it. And so I don't bother with it, you know.
Uh-huh.
Things work fine just the way they are, you know. I love her just the way she is. She loves me just the way I am.
And
just like I told her the other day, you know, I think we make a great team, you know, because all the things that you have to be done on the computer and stuff, you know, when we go to the doctor's office and everything, you know, she takes care of all the computerized stuff, you know, and I don't have to be bothered with none of it, you know. Because everything nowadays, you basically have to do almost everything on the computer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So she takes care of all that for me, you know. And I always make sure that she has dinner. I always make sure that the house is straight. Anything she need, I do for her. Anything I need, she do for me. Yeah, like I said, me and my wife been together since teenagers. We done been through the ups, the downs, the ins, the outs, but we still together, and we still love each other, you know.
Did you tell me that you had two children?
I got one. Well, I had two children. The first boy died. That's back in the day when we was teenagers, you know. His name was Aaron, but he died. He didn't live that long, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I got another son, Jamal. We call him Butter. And Butter, Butter 50 years old, you know. Butter got children. Those are my grandchildren. And then my grandchildren got children. That's my great-grandchild, you know, so.
Now, it's your great-grandson that's the one that I've been watching grow up, right?
No, that's my grandson.
That's your grandson.
That's my son's son. His name is JP.
Okay. So, JP, I just remember why, I shouldn't say watching, because you've never actually sent a picture of him. But you were telling Alan about he was the apple of your eye.
And he still is, because he's a good boy, you know. I mean, in spite of everything, you know, he's a good boy. I mean, he was never a gangster. He never walked around with his pants hanging off his behind. He was always respectful. He still is respectful. I mean, he's soft-spoken.
You had him listening to Alan, though.
He's a beautiful person. You know, me and my wife, we raised him. Hey, he lived with us for a long time before he moved out, you know. But we raised that boy, you know.
And you said that you, or at least you told Alan, that you had him listening with you to Alan's talks.
Hey, you know, Alan, this is back in the day when Alan started it off his shows with Everybody Knows When the Dice Are Loaded,
mm-hmm.
with Cohen, Leonard Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you know, I took my grandson everywhere with me, you know. I took him to nursery school. I picked him up. We went to store. We did everything together. We slept together, you know. And he knew all about Alan Watt. Anyway, that song, you know, he knew that song by heart when he was a little boy, you know. And he used to sing that song all the time. You know, I told him that was Alan Watt's song.
That's how it goes. Everybody knows, and everybody knows that it's now or never. Everybody knows that it's me or you, and everybody knows that you live forever. Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bow. And everybody knows. And everybody knows that the plague is coming. Everybody knows that it's moving fast. Everybody knows that the naked man and woman are just a shining artifact of the past. Everybody knows the scene is dead, but there's gonna be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. And everybody knows that you're in trouble. Everybody knows what you've been through, from the bloody cross on top of Calvary to the beach in Malibu. Everybody knows it's coming apart. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. And everybody knows.
And even the spraying in the sky. I taught him all about the spraying in the sky and chemtrails and all that stuff, you know. And his mother and them, they didn't appreciate me. I don't think they appreciated me teaching him all this stuff, you know, because when he wasn't around me, you know, he would be telling them the same thing, but they didn't understand what he was talking about, you know. Uh-huh. But you know, my grandson now, you know, my grandson was going to UNLV, and they had that shooting over there at UNLV.
Yes.
And the shooting took part in the same department that he takes his classes in. But fortunately, he had left before it all started, you know. But anyway, after that, you know, my grandson, I really think he kind of lost interest in going to college or university after that right there, you know, because he didn't want to go no more, you know.
He was on a football scholarship, right?
No, he wasn't. He didn't make the football scholarship, although he did play football, but he didn't get a football
scholarship. Okay.
Yeah, this had to be paid for out of pocket, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, my grandson, now he's deep off into the church now, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's all right with me, you know, because I'd rather for him to be deep off in the church and into Jesus Christ than most of the things that most of the youngsters are into now, you know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, in due time, you know, he'll find out about all that, too, because he ain't but 18 years old, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the seed had already been planted. Mm-hmm. He knows all about me. He know where I be coming from. We still have little talks from time to time. But like I say, he 18 years old. He got to make his way in this world, too, you know. And I have all the confidence in the world in him, and he'll make his way. He'll be all right.
That's good. Well, that was another really good thing about the talk that you recommended, is that Alan, he said several times that you do have to make your own way, but he also said, if you are seeking, you will find. So whatever you're seeking, that's what you'll find. And that includes if you're seeking ultimate truth, if you're seeking the Creator, you will find what you seek. If you're willing to let go of those illusions and what you think you know.
You will find what you seek. And you know what, another thing I found out?
What's that?
I call myself a truth seeker, right? But one thing I find out is, you know what the truth is.
I do. But
what's
tell
the
me.
Truth? Huh?
You tell me what.
You know
the
what
truth
I think
is.
The truth is.
What's that?
The truth is you.
Yeah.
Think about it.
That's it. How can you complete yourself? How can you know yourself? How can you come into consciousness if it isn't you? What would you then be conscious of if not you?
You're right. So you are the truth.
Yeah.
And man, just think. There's so many more things that we could talk about today. We could go on and on and on, because really, it's so much to talk about, you know. And I'm enjoying myself because I don't get a chance to talk like this too often to too many people. You know, I have to live inside of my head when I'm around most people, you know. It's funny because, you know, we'll be at the racquetball court, and we play our racquetball games, and after the game's over, everybody go out and take their seat. But what's amazing is you look up, and everybody's on their cell phone. So then you sitting there by yourself, you can't have no conversation with nobody because everybody's on their cell phone, you know. That's the most amazing thing to me.
Hi. So the call dropped, but you were telling me that everybody was on their cell phone and at the racquetball thing, and you said that's the most amazing thing to me, and then the line dropped.
Okay. Well, that's true, Melissa. You know, I mean, I just don't know what everybody is so interested in. You know, and also on that talk, Alan, he does. He tells you about the web. He tells you about the net.
Mm-hmm.
You know how everybody gets stuck on the web. You know how everybody get pulled in by the net, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and if you think about that, you know, it's very true because I'm telling you, everybody's stuck on the web and everybody's caught in the net. Man, I really don't see how, you know, the only way, one of the ways to break the spell, everybody got to take their electronic devices and throw them in the trash.
Well,
and that's one way to break the spell. But I don't ever see nothing like that happening.
No, it's very, you know, I mean, it's kind of a, you remember how Alan would always say if he didn't have to do what he was doing, he would just chuck his computer out the window and never think about it again?
I know, that's why I threw mine in the trash.
Yeah. And you know, so that's for sure something that people could do. Now, the irony is, right about the time that he started doing those longer talks, it was a little before that, it might have been like late 2019, the Wi-Fi became available way out where we were in the country. Otherwise, we'd been on satellite. And
right.
the timing of that meant that we could talk the 4 and 5 hour talks that he did, because that would have taken forever on satellite.
Right.
Well, when we went into town to the supplier for the Wi-Fi, they had this package deal that they were offering. And they said that they said we could get a cell phone and a tablet thrown in there, and it was just like some really small amount. And they made that offer, the salesman. We were sitting there, and Alan turned to me and he said, "What do you think? Should we do that?" Now, Prince, I got to tell you that what went through my head was, who are you and what have you done with Alan? I mean, I was completely taken aback by it. But what I said was, well, you know, that's really up to you. I don't, we've never even discussed having a cell phone or a tablet. I don't know. Well, ultimately, we ended up leaving that store with a cell phone and a tablet.
Right.
And we had those things for all of 2020, and Alan would get them out and he would update them, but we never actually used it. And he would take his, you know how people move their finger really fast across the screen? You know, they're really good at playing with the phone, right?
Right.
And I'd see him doing that motion, and I'd go, wow, you know, this is bizarre, as he was updating it. And then he would say, well, what do you think, you know, about such and such, looking at the telephone? And he'd go, can you figure that out? And I'd take it, and then he'd go, oh, no, you're doing it wrong. And I said, you know, every time you get that cell phone out, it's just an irritation. So right. We're not even using it, and it's just irritating us. Well, you know, sadly, when he passed away, that cell phone got me out of Canada.
Right.
Because I was not able to, I mean, I won't go into the details of how, you know, what I call escape from Canada. So now I have one, thanks to Alan, but I try to use it sparingly because it is,
right.
You know, and I don't think, sometimes I just feel like, you know, Alan got it so that I'd have it when I needed to escape from Canada.
You never know.
Yeah. But it is such, it's a, the same thing as like people ask me, you know, they'll go, oh, well, it's, you know, it's on Facebook. And I go, well, you know, I'm not on Facebook. I've never been on Facebook. And they look at me right. like I'm an alien. Well, anyway, so we got the tablet and we got the cell phone. But for years, we didn't have that. And one time,
right.
Alan had to have some surgery on his eyes. And we were at the it was a big eye clinic there in Sudbury. And we were waiting in the waiting room. And it must have been, and this was all the way back in, 2009 at the, maybe even 2008, but it was a long time ago. And there were about 10 people in the waiting room, and all of them, every single one of them, had their face buried on their cell phone. And Alan said, you know, Melissa, we are going to, actually he called me Bev out in public, but he kind of whispered in my ear. He said, you know, we're going to have to get one of those. It could be a dummy, like for children. And then he said, we'll just pretend that we're looking at it, because if we don't do that, we're going to get arrested for being different.
Hey, but that's true. That's a true statement.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a true statement. And now, on every, I don't care where you go, now they're giving away tablets and cell phones, you know, mm-hmm. if you meet the criteria, you know, they giving them away. Every day they got a setup on different corners around the city where you can get a free cell phone and a free tablet, you know. Yeah. Everybody got to be, it in the loop. Every knee must bow.
That's right.
See, Lucifer, he's not omnipresent. He can't be, he's not like the Creator. He can't be everywhere at one time. So this is how he becomes God.
Yeah.
This is how he becomes omnipresent. This is how he keeps track of everything and everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody must be into this electronic world.
Yeah.
Like I say, every knee must bow. Because until every knee bow, he hasn't won.
That's right.
There's got to be whole out somewhere.
You were talking earlier about the sadness that you feel. You're riding around town on your motorcycle and you just see the zombies walking around. And one of the things that makes me the saddest about the whole transgender thing is that it is aimed at the children. And that really is just, you know, it's that thing about what Jesus said. It'd be better for you to drown, to put a millstone around your neck. This is what should happen to you if you harm a child. And what this is, you know, if Alan was talking about the completion, coming into consciousness, the soul's quest to find spirit, this can't happen when you have lost yourself, when you've buried yourself in the net, when you've buried yourself in consuming the kind of ickiness that they put out for us, and a child no longer knows whether it's a boy or a girl. How is that child ever going to complete its journey? And that's the whole point.
That should let you know what you're dealing with.
Yeah. That is the whole
point. The complete
in total destruction of the old to bring in the new. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. A is his world.
That's it.
And we voluntarily give it to him.
And it's
not everybody.
No, not
some
everybody.
Hmm?
Not everybody. And it's a pretty neat thing what Alan said in that talk is, you know, because I've thought a lot about all different kinds of concepts, but reincarnation has never caught my fancy because it's never come into my consciousness or I have never had any part of me feel like I've been here before. You see what I'm saying?
Say that again.
I've never had any inkling that I've been in this world before. So therefore, I can't entertain the idea of reincarnation because I've never experienced any memory or any sensation or any feeling that I've been here before. But when Alan talked in that talk about you must complete this journey or what made you just goes back into the soup.
Right.
And it doesn't go into the soup. In other words, he's saying there's no there to continue on even in some idea like reincarnation because...
Right.
If you talk about reincarnation, you're talking about a being who is retaining some aspect of themselves, but moving back around to do it again.
Right.
And Alan is saying something that rings true for me based on my own experiences, memories, sensations, etc. is no. If you don't unite with your spirit and come into consciousness, there's no you to go anywhere.
It's a done deal.
It's done. It's over.
Yes.
Got to get it right.
That's true. It's a done deal. And this is where it all happens there, right here.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, sometimes I think, and I haven't found an answer for this question yet. Although I think I got an answer, but the purpose of all this, the reason, the purpose for all this, you know, I haven't found a satisfactory answer to that. You know, I mean, could this be a sifting ground? For a particular purpose, is this what it's all about? That's my question. What is this game all about? What's the purpose behind it? It's got to be a reason and a purpose behind all this. You know.
Let me ask you a question.
What?
What was it? Made you seek truth. What was the question or the quest when you said you tried it all? You Jehovah's Witness, Muslim, Baptist, you name it, you tried it. Was there like a single thing? Would you say, Prince, I'm looking for God, I'm looking for ultimate truth? What was it that you were looking for?
I was looking to be free. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
I was looking to be free. I wanted to be free from all the madness, all the confusion, all the chaos, all the BS. I just wanted to be nice and plain. Simple and free.
Yeah. See,
I wanted to be able to love and enjoy I don't need no stress or anxiety or hatred or I don't need none of that. I wanted to be free. See, I thought, and this is was one of my takes from Alan. He was free.
Yes.
He was free.
Yeah.
That's why he could speak like he spoke. That's why he knew what he knew. And he didn't fret nothing. He wasn't scared of nothing. He was free.
Yeah.
So, maybe that might be one of the reasons why I caught on to him the way I did catch on to him, because, like I say, I was just trying to find a way I wanted to be free.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know this, but that's really the meaning of you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
Right.
And you're right. Alan was free. And he also knew that the only freedom in this world is in your own mind.
Right. And Melissa, you know what? I'm free.
Me too.
I don't fret nothing. I don't have no anxiety no more. I don't worry about nothing no more. I mean, I'm free. And like I said, I'm never bored. It's something to see, do, and hear every day. I can make good of anything.
Yeah.
The good, the bad, I can make good of anything. Mm-hmm. I'm free. I'm all right.
See, because you're talking, you're asking that question, and it's an interesting one that I guess we all have to answer for ourselves, but what's the purpose? Is this the sifting ground? And, you know, sometimes people will say they're looking for God or they're looking for the Creator, and I think that there was a point maybe early in my life where that would have been the way that I would have put it. But then I ask myself the question, What does a Creator want from me if I haven't done everything that I can do right here, right now, to free myself from my illusions and my fears and my anxieties and my, you know, and I know that the conservative Christian is going to say, well, you know, Jesus died on the cross to free us from our sins, and you don't have to do anything, basically, because that debt has already been paid for you by his sacrifice. And I don't see it that way.
But that has nothing to do with what we're talking about, though, because what you just said, that's part of their game.
Yeah.
That comes from them.
That's right.
Being free means coming from you.
Yeah.
You know, that comes from them. That ain't got nothing to do with what you're talking about. Alan said something else. He said something else about the angels. And the angels said, nobody can understand the mind of the Creator.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of things that we don't know that we won't know.
Yeah.
But still, you carry on, and you do the best you can.
Yeah.
And that's about all you can hope for. And by carrying on and doing the best you can, don't worry about it. You're going to get looked after. Everything's going to be all right.
That's it. And, you know, you're asking that, you know, the purpose of this and the sifting ground. I mean, I used to say some things like your wife says, you know, I love you. And you say she's always telling you that, you know, she loves you. And And maybe that's a kind of a female way, but I'd say to Alan, you know, I love you. I always want to be with you. Even when this life is over, I want to be with you.
Right.
And how do I do that? I mean, I asked him that. How do I do that? And he, because it is a journey for me, he'd sometimes just kind of smile or, you know, but he said, well, I can tell you one thing. It's a moment by moment decisions and actions on your part. It's every choice that you make every day, every minute of every day, that determines the outcome for you.
And that's the unknown, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the only way, I mean, hey, the only way you're going to find out, hey, is the unknown.
That's it.
So you got to deal with it.
And
I mean, the outcome might not be the outcome that you might have wanted, you know, but still, it's the unknown.
Yeah.
Everything beyond this point is unknown.
Yeah.
And regardless, you got to go for it.
That's it. So once you start, as you said, playing their game or using their language, you know, what Alan offered in what I discovered that he offered was how to free fall.
Mm-hmm.
And how to be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe even free fall isn't a word that's the best description. I think for me, what he offered is how to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And the temptation is you get up there and you go, you know, like, I'm flying. And then you want to grab a hold of something. What is that that you're grabbing hold of? Is that religion that explains, that gives you some concrete language for what the hereafter might be or how you should behave if that's what you want? Or the thing that you grab a hold of might be a political solution. I mean, you know, earthbound, matterbound.
Mm-mm.
But if you like to fly, you just don't even bother reaching out to grab a hold of the explanation for what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You say, well, I like freedom. I like to be free in my mind. I don't need this to make sense to anybody else. It feels good.
Mm-hmm. Whatever works for you, Melissa. Hey, whatever works for you. It's your journey.
Yeah.
It's your song. You don't need no confirmation from nobody else.
Yeah.
Just, I hate to say this, but hey, Nike, just do it. That's all I can say.
But whenever I talk to you or hear from you, it is a kind of a kindred thing, because your response, your kind of immediate recognition that what Alan was providing wasn't a map or a blueprint, but he was just kind of gesturing, here. See what I'm doing.
You know, Alan, he taught you how to think. He taught you how to use your mind. He taught you how to use your brain. I mean, he introduced a lot of things, you know. I mean, like your mind, your brain. I mean, it's the best computer that there ever could be.
Mm-hmm.
And he taught me how to use it. All right. Like he used to say, It's a portion of the brain that people, they don't even know it's there. They don't even use it. But it's up there, you know. So he told me how to use that portion of the brain. He taught me how to use my brain. He showed me how to think. You know, Melissa, I think that there were much more that Alan could have told us, but he just gave us enough because he knew it would be a few people that could go ahead and take it further. But I think he could have gave us much, much more. Because, you know, in his book on page 10, and he gives you the free masonry 90 degree, and he gives you the three levels. Mm-hmm. You know, the university, secret society, service club, and son of legacy. He always told you it was like three layers of science, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's only, them three layers is only 90 degrees. Now, he also told us that three masonry was 360 degrees. That's 360 degrees. So when I thought about that, I said, well, damn, if it's 360 degrees and these three levels is only 90 degrees, then actually it must be 12 levels of science. And then we live in a pyramid structure. And if you count the levels on a pyramid, there's 12 levels. The 13th level is the light of Lucifer and the capstone. Mm-hmm. Lucifer is the capstone. And then if you read 3001, it gives you an idea of what I'm talking about when I say there's 12 levels of science, you know. You know, because I read this book, and I'm reading it again, you know, and this must have went by me the first time I read it, you know. But anyway, the character in the, if you got to read the first two books, that'll lead you into 3001. So anyway, the character, he gets rescued, and now he's in this new world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady, they're talking about transportation, you know. And the lady tells him that we don't have the Star Trek transportation yet, but it's being worked on. So you know when the captain used to say, "Beam me up, Scotty,"
mm-hmm.
on Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they got around. You know, they was beaming each other down and beaming each other back up and stuff, you know. So in this book, 3001, you know, she talks about, you know, that same type of technology, you know, that's being worked on. So I'm telling myself then, and they talk about a whole lot more in 3001. Everybody should read the book. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that just tells me about the levels of science that exists. And if they're talking about that in this book, it already exists. They are transporting themselves around in that fashion. So you see why I say nothing is boring. It's always something to think about.
Do you know, on page 10, when you're looking at the 90 degrees of Freemasonry and you see level 3?
Right.
And it's Sons of Legacy?
Right.
You see how Alan has underlined the S and the O and the L?
Yeah, S-O-L.
Soul, Son. It's interesting because each level, if you're talking about, and I think, you know, the 12 levels there, that you have to extrapolate from those first three. Mm-hmm. It's interesting the way that in this ancient brotherhood, how important the 12 and the 13 are always.
Right.
But at the lower... 13th
floor, 12 disciples, all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. And at the lower level there, you know, see those people at the 90 degrees, they think that they're at the top level, SOL, sun worship. You know, you've always got that light. So what they're aiming for is that light of Lucifer, the highest power that they can attain on this earth, because that's where they're trapped.
Right.
But each level below that thinks, oh, aha, I'm at the highest level, you know.
Right. So SOL.
Yeah. Soul. Son.
Son of Lucifer.
Could be, yeah. I mean, the son can have, you know, different meanings, but yeah, son of Lucifer. S-O-L
right.
is, you know, the French for soul, soleil, son.
Well, I didn't, but I do now.
Yeah.
Well, see, just like I said, see, something to think about. Yeah.
But you're right. It's not a boring place.
No. And plus, I love thinking, you know, oh, man, people just don't realize what a great thing it is to be able to think, you know? To be what Alan called a lunar thinker. To be able to go here and go there and then go here and then go there. You know, just back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean it's so exciting, you know? I mean, it gets me all revved up, you know? I love to think, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I can just be sitting and I be staring, you know, and my wife, she'll be looking at me and she'll speak to me and I don't say nothing. Then she say, she'll call me again, you know, she say, are you all right? And I tell her, I'm just thinking, you know, because there's so much thinking about. Thinking is part of my entertainment package.
Yes. Well, you shared that in common with Alan because he, you know, and I remember early on when, you know, when I first met him, we had a long conversation and he talked about thinking. And he said, it's kind of sad people who don't learn to think or don't like to think, don't want to think, because thinking is the most fun that you could ever have.
It is. It really is. And when I was young, one of the reasons why I never got into smoking marijuana, you know, never. And the reason was I never got into it is because it's like my brain was already racing all the time. And when I would smoke some marijuana, it would even race more, you know. And I couldn't keep up with it, and it made me feel uncomfortable, you know. It made me feel so uncomfortable to the point where I would get paranoid sometimes. You know, your mind just be ready, you be thinking of this, you thinking of that. And so I never got into smoking marijuana. I didn't like that at all. So I stayed away from that.
Well... You know, it's the thing about consciousness. If consciousness is the goal, why do you want to dull that down by anything that changes your brain's chemistry?
Well, it's we just chalk that down as an experience.
Yeah.
That's all it is, just an experience, you know.
Yeah. No, yeah.
And that's how you direct your path through your experiences.
Yeah. Well, I've had enough of those mind altering experiences to know that I prefer my brain without any kind of external aids.
Oh, well, I agree with you. It's much better.
Yeah.
And then we know what all the drugs and chemicals, we know what that's all about anyway.
It's kind of like...
I told you to look up something. Forever poison. Did you ever get into that?
I didn't. I have it written down. I have the post-it that I wrote it on, but I didn't have a chance between when we spoke and just now to look it up. You want to tell me about it? Or you want to wait until I look it up?
No, I want you to look it up.
Okay.
And then I want me and you to have a conversation about it.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, Prince, I think we've had a good recording for this. I will look up that. We'll have another conversation, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
And so what I'm going to do now is say goodbye to the listeners and remind them that next week I'm going to be talking with Neil Foster for the monthly, second week of the month with Neil. And I'm wishing you all the very, very best with your knee surgery. And I thank you for taking the time to do this conversation with me.
No problem. It was a pleasure.
Good deal.
I can see clearly now the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day. I think I can make it now.